Welcome to For the Record, an unfiltered view on current trends and timeless advice for surviving in the aesthetics industry. Whether you're an injector, practice owner, sales rep, or marketer, it's time to set the record straight. Each week, we cut through the chaos and showcase diverse perspectives and winning ideas from the best minds in the industry. I'm your host, Dr. Tiffany Hall, Chief Growth Officer at Aesthetic Record. Now, let's get started on this week's episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of For the Record. And today we have gone international. We've gone to the motherland, to the UK, to find our next guest who kind of happened upon me through LinkedIn, through Instagram, through seeing a lot of his activities and things he was doing. Mr. Rick O'Neill, who is the founder of LTF, which is Look, Touch, Feel, which is an agency that only focuses on aesthetics in the UK, on Silverstone, which is, if you guys are F1 racing fans, like, I just got to know about that for one thing. Go Max Verstappen. I'm a huge F1 fan, but he's in the heart of all the things in the London area. He's also been a digital consultant for about 20 years, and the agency, I think, is also about 20 years old, and he has done things for nationally, for Allergan, for MERS, for laser companies. He's leading all these digital boot camps, which he's going to bring to Aesthetic Next in September. But he is truly a master and a connoisseur, if you will, of all things aesthetics and knowing how to do digital marketing within this particular niche and how to really capitalize on what you have at your fingertips. We're going to talk today about AI, about his digital marketing expertise, about his new book coming out, about the workshop for Aesthetic Next, really take a deep dive into his brain and how we should be thinking about marketing in the U.S., based on what he's been doing overseas for many, many years. So, Rick, welcome to our show. We are so glad to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. And thank you for that kind introduction.
Well, your accent's enough. We could just have you talk about, you could just read like the milk carton in the phone book and I would love it. I'm going to be a British person in my next life. I watch all the shows. I can do the accent quite well. Like, I'm obsessed with it. But I did find you, I think on LinkedIn, you were doing a podcast with someone or you had posted about Black Belt Digital. And I thought, man, this guy knows his stuff. Like, he really is in this industry. And I was just blown away by somebody who really thought about, it isn't all social media, which is why I loved you, because it wasn't all about Instagram. It was really about the holistic idea of digital marketing. But I want to kind of take a step back to where you come from, because LTF has won lots of awards. You guys are a prominent marketing agency in the UK. You're doing big, huge things in aesthetics. You individually are doing big, huge things in aesthetics as well. Give us an idea of like what that looks like and what it means, you know, to come from an agency background and kind of start this thing on your own as well with the new book and all the other pieces.
Yeah, of course. So, I mean, how far do we go back? I come from a small seaside town in the UK called Brighton. I'm a husband to a semi-pro cyclist and father to two teenage kids. So, you know, pray for me. I've been in digital for 24 years, something like that. LTF is 15. LTF is the second agency that I've grown. LTF started in 2008. It's a full service digital marketing agency. We only work in aesthetics. Our first ever client was a consultant plastic surgeon, and he is still with us today. So he's been on retainer with us for 15 years, and we've probably driven millions of revenue and patients to him. His name is Vic Vige. And that really kicked us off into this crazy world of aesthetics and cosmetic procedures, etc. And we have just focused on that ever since. We work with both the brands and the manufacturers and with clinics and med spas, practitioners. We have been behind some pretty big digital campaigns for the brands. You mentioned some of them, Allergan, MERS, Alma Laser. They're now going direct in the UK. But we also support hundreds of clinics, practitioners. We're either coaching them or we're delivering digital marketing services for them. And that's in the UK, it's in Australia, it's in Canada. And we just took our first US client on board, which is somebody in Los Angeles with two locations. So we're really excited about that. And obviously, I'm coming to see you guys in September. So who knows what will happen after that. But our primary focus is we stay at the edge of digital marketing. So we've got our face in the storm, and then we break that down into simple terms for all of our clients, because there's a lot of overwhelm for practice managers, practice owners, but also executive and reps in the brands. There's a lot of overwhelm when it comes to digital marketing. So I see our job as translators, as coaches and guides. In fact, I call most of my team digital coaches when they're working with clinics, because that's really what we're doing. And it's everything. It's search optimization, web design, web development, social campaigns, writing content, promoting content. But also, you mentioned we're going to get into AI automation. We're involved in all of that because we like to partner with people holistically. We don't tend to get involved in bits and pieces. If we partner with somebody, we partner with them for life, in all things digital. That's how we work. And our whole focus is to help grow that practice or help grow that brand with all things digital.
Well, I love that you said holistically, because we work with a lot of clients here in the US, and they have a web guy, they have a social media person, they have a person doing email campaigns. And it's like, to thread that all together to be one holistic or one really concentrated effort where it's all saying the same thing in the same voice and the same kind of design, it has to be impossible to do. I imagine it adds a lot of extra time and cost, frankly, to project manage all of it, where you could just get an agency that's really soup to nuts all the things together. But, you know, I think about that from an agency perspective. Give us an idea of some of the big brands that you work with, like what kinds of things you're doing on the big brand side of it, because I know it's a very different world to work with like an Allergan than to work with like Dr. Joe Jones. So give us an idea of kind of that scale and what that looks like.
Yeah, of course. And we are internally split, actually, between the two. So we have account director and digital coaches for the brand side, and the same on the practice side. I kind of work between the two, consulting with leadership of some of those pharma companies and manufacturers, but also doing the coaching and workshops and things for practice owners. But to your point about the brands, a lot of the things that we'd be doing is really engaging with healthcare professionals around educational initiatives, around brand launches. A good example of this is with MERS. So we're responsible for not only looking after the direct-to-consumer campaigns for things like Old Therapy and Bellatero, but also on the business side of it and clinical training side of it, we're building platforms for MERS. So in the UK, we've built something called the eCademy, where there's lots of clinical training modules on there. And then it's our job to build the campaigns that recruit healthcare professionals into that platform. And we've done some really innovative films and social first movies and ads and campaigns to do that, which are very unusual in the world of pharmaceutical. They're very cutting edge. They use kind of TikTok transitions. We've had drones, people with cameras on their head, cameras in their mouth. We've done some crazy stuff with some really high profile doctors to raise awareness about these campaigns. And in the case of eCademy, that is up for an award this year with the Pharmaceutical Society in the UK, because the film and the campaign for that platform recruited the best part of 5,000 healthcare professionals in the first 6 months onto that platform, which was a great result for MERS UK and Ireland. So that's a really good example. That's kind of typical of the things that we're doing for brands. And again, with Alma Laser, they just recently, in the last 6 months, went direct in the UK. So they've sunsetted the distributor in the UK and Ireland, and now they're going direct. So they wanted to make a big entrance, and we've helped them do that across all channels, all platforms, and do it in a really fresh way, because we always want to do something that's going to get these people noticed. I'm very inspired by Hollywood campaigns. So we always do super teasers, then teasers, and we go big and we use different channels and try to think different for the brands.
Yeah, I think, you know, so we have a production company here, Aesthetic Next Productions, and we do both too. We do, you know, for the practitioner, but also for the big brands. And if people always ask about, like, I can't afford what they would pay at Galderma or at MERS or Allergan, like, but it's a different thing that you're buying. You know, to your point, when you have a brand, you can do things like create, we just flew a drone this weekend at an event. You know, you can fly drones, you can do three cameras, you can have an audio engineer on site, you can do tons of editing and, you know, all these amazing things, where a practitioner doesn't need all of that, right? They're doing a much different kind of budget that they're working with. And we're going to pare it down to one camera, one guy, you know, cool transitions, but almost in a sense, somewhat templatized kind of to make it affordable for them. And so I think, you know, I'm sure that you're finding this as well with LTF, is that you have to kind of serve all these different budgets, different needs, and you got to be really dynamic in what you're offering. And so as you kind of think through that, you know, if I'm a practitioner in the room, you know, thinking about, gosh, I would love to have somebody like Rick on my team and, you know, have a marketing agency like that in the US, how do you scale that? You know, what does it look like for a practice to hire you? and work with you directly? Because you're not going to do cameras and mouths and cameras on heads and drones, most likely. Are they working with you here in the U.S. and sending you content? You guys are helping to edit it and helping to get the voice crafted? Or, you know, are you going to fly here to the U.S., which, as we know, you are going to here in a few weeks. But how does that work with you being, you know, there and we're all here?
Yeah, so with the practitioner side, in terms of creating content, there are some that are more local to us than where we are creating that source content. But for the most part, we're finding, if we need to, or coaching the practice owner to find local partners like you guys, like your production team, to help with the content production. What we do is we write a lot of content, we craft it, we SEO optimize it, and then we drive it hard to generate leads. So all of that can be done remotely. And that's how it works for the vast majority of our practitioner clients. So as I said, we've got people as far away as New Zealand. That time zone never works for anybody, by the way, New Zealand. But we make it work, and we've got some great results with our Australian and New Zealand clinics. But for the photography, for the filming, that kind of thing, that stuff, we look for local partners to get involved in the mix. In the UK, it's a bit easier for us to get around, because, you know, I think the UK can fit into Dallas probably, or one of your states, I'm sure. So it's a bit easier. But it is different to the brands in terms of budgets, of course, but the creativity still applies. And we've done that as well. We've done, you know, for quite small budgets, we've done some pretty cutting edge creative films for practices, for initiatives, for some of the societies in the aesthetic space in the UK as well. So really it's about the message and the flow of the campaign, more than the polish or the drone or the cameras in on people's heads and things like that. So still can be done. But our focus for the most part with a practice for the done for you digital side is giving you a really strong presence across all platforms. Because as you said, I have warnings to issue about being obsessed with just a single social media platform, Instagram, for example. And, you know, we're probably going to get into it, but, you know, the data doesn't support it as compared to the amount of focus it gets and the amount of investment it gets. Investment meaning your time and your effort and the concentration and stress you go through to create content for it, versus is it a really good platform to find new patients? Not so sure anymore. So our focus is creating a broad digital strategy on platforms that you own and that Mark Zuckerberg does not own. Because if you're over reliant on those meta platforms, you're building on your castle on someone else's quicksand. And it's a risky strategy.
Yeah, that's been a big thing here lately. We've had lots of injectors get shut down, you know, because a competitor can shut you down. A competitor can complain about you to Facebook, to Meta, and they can just shut you down. So we had a guest on, I think, I don't know, 2 years ago, who said, you know, you're renting space on Instagram. You're renting space on Facebook. You don't own anything. So when it's time to go, the landlord cancels your contract and you're done. Like, you can't take it with you. And so we just had a guest on actually this season who said, you know, of her entire lead gen, 40% comes from word of mouth and her local community, not from Instagram. She's a very big influencer, has lots of Instagram following, but she's like, it's not where you get patients. And I've heard that time and time again, that it's not where you get patients. It's where you have to have it. It's part of your brand, but it isn't where you actually get leads to come in and convert and buy things. So I know we'll get into that in a second, but, you know, so think through what you just mentioned. We're big here about, you know, if you have good quality video and photos, whatever you build around it is so much easier. That's the part that's always hardest. So the fact that you're doing the content now with all these great AI tools too, you can even capture decent content without having to have expensive cameras and things. But that's really changed the game too. And I'm sure as an agency, you are probably feeling some of that and how to use AI to leverage it where it doesn't put you out of business. I don't want to say that, but take business away from you, but actually add to what you're currently doing. So, you know, thinking through that, if we could take 4 steps back from that and AI and all the things that are happening, what is your preferred platform? So if I'm an injector who's like, Rick, I want to grow my brand. I need, you know, I've got a finite budget. I got to get some shit going here, bud. Where do I invest that money? Where do you think I get the best ROI? Is it to build my brand? Is it to spend money on pay-per-click? Is it to do video ads? Is it, where do I send the money to get the most bang for my buck?
You know, I think the place to start, or the place to diagnose first, is Google local search. we get some great results with clinics, whether they're just starting out or even some of the really advanced multi-location, bigger clinics where they've relied in the past on pay-per-click ads and not really paid much attention to the Google business profile and how to optimize for it and how that connects with what you do on your website and what happens on your social content. They're all connected. So we would always start with that as a place to look for low-hanging fruit and also go a bit deeper, because we think there's around 80 ranking factors that determine where a clinic might appear in those local map results. And those map results are powerful. The top three of that, what we call map pack, they get 70% of all the search traffic for each search term. And the whole rest of the list fights over the remaining 30%. So we really push on the marginal gains to be had in there. And it's hard work. There's no kind of silver bullet to, sadly, for this. It's small incremental habits that you have to get into. But we teach this, or we do it for clinics, and it always delivers some kind of result. Sometimes dramatic if it's something they've never looked at, or even small gains for people that feel they had nailed it, or felt they had an SEO agency already working on it. We find and we uncover more. So Google Local is the place that we'd always start, over and above obsessing with, you know, Instagram. But really, it depends on who you're after, who, what kind of demographic you're looking for, where you are geographically. We've got clinics who, before we met them, entirely to their credit, built huge followings on YouTube and completely ignored Instagram. We've got people in Australia who post content on Reddit and generate new patients from it. We've got other clinics, New Zealand, Pinterest boards, generating lots of patients. So we're always about the data. We're always about trial and error, A/B testing, and not just following a kind of out of the box approach. But always number one, we look at, and when we take people through our scorecard, the first 25% of the questions, it's about 100 questions, are all about Google Local presence, and how can we make sure that for every treatment you offer, every condition you offer, you are the authority locally within a radius of your clinic. Because with Google Local, you know that anybody searching is already at a high point of intent. They've decided to take an action and they're looking for a solution to a condition or for a particular treatment type that they may have heard of in their area. Also, they are ready to act. You know, they have the means, they have the wherewithal to get started. Whereas on social media, you don't know where they are. You don't know where they are in their journey, geographically, financially, demographically. You don't have a clue. And actually, if you're all honest, you're following far too many of each other. You're all following other practitioners to see what they're doing. Whereas Google is a much more focused stream of potential patients that are ready to go. So we always look there first.
I think Instagram is for the voyeurs. Like, I have a TikTok. I have never actually done a TikTok. I've been voyeuring other people for, like, I don't know, 2 years. I have no interest to ever do it, to actually dance on TikTok. We have a company TikTok that one of my employees started because she's like young and into TikTok. I'm like, you got to take it, sister. I can't do it. Like, I can't have one more thing on my plate marketing wise. But, you know, I think there's just now Threads is out. What the hell is Threads? Nobody really knows what Threads is. It's like Zuckerberg trying to, you know, take on Elon. I don't know what that's about. But anyway, thinking about Google, you just mentioned, you know, a few words there. I think about this, like the EAT score, right? The expertise, authority, and trust. Talk about that a lot. Like, you know, when you repost someone else's content all day long on your website, not going to get you anywhere. If it's content that Allergan wrote, that you're just going to take their, you know, their article and then put it in. I was doing a search last week for a product. I wanted to get a few key things out of product, and I searched for the product, like a long tail keyword, like a keyword phrase. And I probably had 50 practices that popped up with the exact same article in all of them. Wow. Because it found that long tail keyword, you know, that long tail keyword that was from the original article. I'm like, does no one have an original thought? Like, take the time to take the words that you've seen and make them your own, and, you know, define yourself as the expert. And I think that Google doesn't really recognize the EAT score. We all know that's kind of how things work, and looking at your Lighthouse score on your, you know, dev tools, like, there's all kinds of ways to do that. But I think it's a mystery to everyone. It's a total mystery to people how Google actually looks at the algorithm and figures it out. But I think on top of that is also pay-per-click, the audience. we talk about that here a lot. If you have a Facebook ad or a pay-per-click, like you have to know, you have to calibrate that stuff in so much, especially on Facebook, like who's your lookalike audience, looking at your current patient list, figuring out who that is and your upload to make, you know, match your audience, but also pay-per-click, what's your conversion and is it per click or is it per conversion? Because it's a way different cost to you depending on which event you choose. There's just so much there to learn that for an average practice owner, like they don't have the time for that, right? They don't have the time to learn all of it. They don't have the neuroplasticity, I guess, to take it all in and also run their business and be an injector. And so from your perspective, what is the benefit of hiring an agency? Like, why do I invest in the agency as opposed to saying, I'll do it myself, I'll figure it all out? What do you bring to the table that, you know, me, I could never do on my own as an injector also owning a practice? And I'm sure that the list is many, but give us your top three things that you have to have that only somebody like you doing it all the time can do for them.
I mean, the first point to make is that there's a reason that I'm not injecting myself or anybody else, is that that's not what I do. And most practitioners, this is not what you do. Simple as that, really. You should always outsource anything that's not your core. So whether it's us or any good digital agency. I always say, though, if an agency approaches you, that's a no, because the real experts are far too busy to be cold calling and sliding in your DMs and all of that dodgy stuff. If they are doing that, then run. If you can't find anybody in your network that has worked with them or could refer them or anybody in this space that could recommend them, I would run. But when you get down to the actual skills, have they got experience in your sector? Do they understand? You talked about SEO and everybody putting out the same articles. There's good reason for that. It's because they don't carry out the proper research to create original content. And this is going to become more of a problem actually with AI, because AI is great in the right hands. It will get you maybe 70% there with a decent article that you could optimize for search. But that remaining 30% is where you make your difference, where you position yourself as the authority for Google. Google don't actually care if you use AI to create content, but what they really care about, and this has never changed. So although I take completely your point about it's a mystery about the algorithm, and their mission's always been the same, to serve their customers, which is the person typing in the search box, with content that's useful for humans. And so this whole content thing, what we do, we teach a slightly different strategy, or we deliver it if we're doing it for you. It's one of the things that we've learned over the last 10, 15 years. All starts with Answer the Public data, answerthepublic.com, fantastic resource and tool that tells you what are the questions that people have asked about this thing for the last year or so on Google in our region. Locally to us, what are the questions or what are the comparisons they've made to other conditions or treatments in this area? Then you can add your 10 pence to it. You can add your expertise, your flair, your trial and error that you've been through to learn about it. Then you go skyscraping. You look at your competitors in your local area and you just make sure your article's better, longer, more informative, better structured. It includes a video, pull out quotes, testimony, before and afters. You make it the best version of that article. You should spend 2 or 3 weeks on that rather than cranking out 10 or 20 subpar versions of these articles, because that one article will be there forever. It will deliver more traffic and leads than any tweet or thread or TikTok ever would. And it will be there for a long time. It will be evergreen. So this is one of the things that we do on an ongoing basis as part of our Done For You digital marketing for practices. We also follow the same kind of strategy for the brands as well, actually, to drive trade inquiries around devices or injectables, whatever it might be. So, and I think a really good digital agency should not be scared to teach you how this works as well as do it for you. In a lot of the workshops that I do, in my book for sure, there's things that would make a lot of digital agencies uncomfortable that I'm telling everybody how it works. But I get a real kick, especially at my age, Tiffany. I'm pushing 50 now. I don't care. I've been there and done it. I will tell everybody how this works. And if you are of the inclination to be a do-it-yourself, have-a-go hero, and you'll sit there Thursday, Friday evening with a glass of Chardonnay trying to do this stuff. Good luck. And I really mean that. But I, as an entrepreneur, and this is where I can really empathize with a lot of entrepreneurs, I think you should outsource everything that isn't your passion and your skill, and anything that's not a high value task for you. Because if you're trying to do $10 million this year, $20 million this year, divide the hours you've got in the year from that 20 million, that's your hourly rate. You shouldn't be working on anything that generates less than that amount. Accounting, outsource it. Business development, you could outsource. Digital marketing, you should definitely partner with someone you can trust. You need to understand what they're doing, because a lot of the time, practice owners in a rush, as we said earlier on, will buy some SEO over here or some pay-per-click over here or a website designer over here or a marketing consultant that might hover above all of those people, but they're not actually in control of what's happening. They're not fully aware of the scope, haven't asked the right questions at the beginning, because how could they? So you need to find a partner that really coaches you and delivers for you. And I think that's where the benefit comes, is if you get the right partner, they can really guide you through all of those different pitfalls and scary parts.
Yeah, I think about us here, you know, I know how to do a lot of it. We spend a lot of time here learning about, you know, those different things. We just launched a marketing software that's kind of in a beta phase of like 60 accounts or so to help them kind of figure out how to do all the automations and different things. So we're, you know, I feel like we're pretty well versed here on doing it. I don't have the time to do it, Rick. I agree with you. It's like, I know how we should be looking at SEO. We should be looking at ads and our website. You know, we went to a React Native website, which you guys are like total nerd girl, because you can't get as good as of SEO depending on client side and server side rendering. Like, there's all these like really intricate developer things you have to know about your site responsiveness and et cetera, et cetera. Long story short, we know the things, but who has time to do the things? Surely not me, because again, I'm running a business. You're not running my business. You're running your business, and your business is this thing. And so we had the same issue here with when we build people's accounts for Aesthetic Record. Of like, you can spend your whole day building your EMR and all the reporting and all the, you know, inventory uploads and customer uploads and features and benefits, or you can go be an injector, and I'll do that for you at, you know, a fraction of the cost of what you're going to spend not injecting and doing this instead, and deliver a better quality product to you because I know how to do it. Like, it's our expertise. So I think that people often miss that, thing they're going to save, you know, they're saving $10, but it's going to cost them, you know, $100,000. It's going to cost them a ranking on Google or being the authority and all these different things that you don't think about. Opportunity costs have a significant dollar assigned to them when it comes to marketing long term. And so I agree with you wholeheartedly. You got to think about the things that you don't do well, and or even if you do, and outsource them. But I think to that same point, the fear is, and I'm sure you hear this a lot, you're from a respectable agency, so it's different. But, you know, in the U.S., people have these like fly-by-night agencies. They pop them open. They do the same website template for everyone. They do the same SEO for everyone. They have, you know, they have a client that's next door to the other client, and they get ripped off, and they get vanity metrics like impressions and click-throughs and things that don't really matter, don't talk about conversion at all. And they don't know enough to call bullshit on it, to say that this is not real. This is not real tangible metrics. These are not things I'm paying you a lot of money to do, like activity, but activity is not productivity, right? But it's not getting the job done. So I think if you don't understand it, at least at some fundamental level, you will get completely swindled, because marketing now with AI, especially, everyone has an AI tool they can use and like show you things and do things for you. But it's not, to Rick's point, it's not the same. It gets you kind of there, but you got to finish it off with your own expertise. So I think you got to understand the basics of it to know what you're paying for when you get an agency, and be able to keep them accountable and then keep you accountable. Because if you understand it, it's a lot easier to work with a person like Rick, who can tell you what to do, what not to do. You know, like you said, coaching me through the videos I should post and the content I should be posting. It's much easier that way. But, you know, you mentioned that you coach people a lot. And so I want to talk about that, because you've done this black belt digital course, which, by the way, you are a black belt, I believe, in Taekwondo. So it's fun that it all comes full circle to your love of Taekwondo. But Black Belt Digital to me is remarkable, because it goes through all the high points. It goes through all the things that are really the pain points and the weaknesses of our injectors who are trying to be everyone to everything to everybody, as we all know. But you're really walking through coaching, like you said, teaching them how to do it themselves. So where did that idea come from? I know you've done it for MERS. You kind of led a whole academy for them with Black Belt Digital. It's coming to the U.S., obviously, in September at Aesthetic Next. What does that course entail, and what can we expect to learn from that?
Yeah, so I'm really chuffed with this. Hey, is chuffed a word in the US? Who knows?
No, means, what's it mean? Does it mean happy?
It means like happy, excited.
Oh, okay.
There you go. You've all just learned some UK vernacular. Black Belt Digital. Yeah. What is it? Why is it black belt? You mentioned I am a black belt in Taekwondo. I'm also an instructor in Taekwondo now. I've been doing that for 12 years now. I noticed, And one of the reasons I first came out a few years ago, starting to talk, do workshops, speak on stage, do webinars, was actually to your previous point. I was getting frustrated with how much swindling was going on in the digital world. And I really do enjoy the process of breaking it down into simple terms and walking people through it so that they understand enough how to prioritize, what order in which to do things, why each thing is important and what it achieves for them. Then they can make smarter decisions. And that's really what Black Belt Digital is about. I've used the Black Belt as a theme to make it more fun and interesting. It does make my workshops quite different to any you will have been to before, because you will learn Korean, you will learn parts of Taekwondo, we will have some fun, and we will learn lots of digital marketing strategies and tactics. So when I come over to see you in Dallas in September, you're giving me two and a half hours with these people, so I can go deep on the Black Belt course. And we're really going to cover five what I call critical building blocks for a successful digital strategy for any med spa or aesthetic practice, but also execs and reps in a brand as well. And the five blocks are your website. So you really need a black belt level website that's designed to attract, educate, and convert a visitor into a patient or client. Number two, a strong presence. Notice I still haven't mentioned Instagram yet. Number two, you need a strong presence on Google, specifically Google Local. And we've covered some of that. Then a black belt level content strategy. So we touched on that a little bit, but it's really about that positioning you as the authority on and being there with your content, your platforms that you own, i.e. your website, but also YouTube channel, articles you've written. Whenever that potential patient has a question or a condition they're dealing with and they start searching around it, you've got to be there. If you're within a driving distance of that person, you should be there, no matter what the channel. So it's the content strategy that holds that together. Then I walk through a series of warnings around social media, but there's also a lot of positivity around what it is good for and how to get best use out of it. But I do have issues with the over reliance and over obsession, particularly with Instagram, it seems, and increasingly with TikTok, although I do find TikTok really interesting. I think there is opportunity there. And I'm the same as you, Tiffany. I've just hired a TikTok expert because, you know, I missed that train. We are going to go on there. We've come up with a format for it for hours. I'm going to be on FaceTime calls. Faked FaceTime calls with my TikTok expert. She's going to ask me a question, I'll answer it. That'll be our TikTok channel. But I talk through social with caution, and then I give the antidotes to all of the problems with it. The biggest ones being you don't own that platform, the algorithm is in decline, it's diminishing returns year on year at the moment, as far as I can see, with data across about 300 clinics that we track. Then the fifth building block after social is around automation, CRM systems, automated workflows. You know, how do you build a modern, clean, flexible system, whatever that may be? System could be one platform, could be bolting together a few to create a bit more sophistication into your marketing with existing patients, because that's really where the gold is. They've already spent money with you. That's who you should be mining first before you go out and dance on TikTok and point at text on screen and things like that. You should be harvesting the data, segmenting the data, and learning how to retain them, bring them back, stay front of mind with them at the right times. And so we do a lot of work actually learning lots of different systems, because we don't know what software the clinic's got when they come to us. It could be any one of, I think at last count, maybe 30 different software platforms in different countries and markets. And we spend a lot of our time connecting that existing system to things like MailChimp or Campaign Monitor, using Zapier, which is our favorite piece of middleware, to trigger intelligent communications, email, WhatsApp, whatever it may be, based on certain behaviors or events. So if they've had a dermal filler treatment, they clunk click into this train track and they get these pre-programmed communications until such time as they book in again. So that's the fifth building block. So we're going to go through all of that in Black Belt Digital in a way that's simple to understand, in the right priority order, gives everybody that attends an actionable checklist of things that they can go and do the next day. And by the way, it's a Black Belt Digital class. You're in a digital dojo, so there is accountability. So you come to that workshop, you get assigned a training partner, and we all take an oath together, and people will implement what they learn as soon as they get back to their practice. Because if we're all honest, we've all been to great speeches, presentations, workshops, written lots of notes. Everybody loves to take a photo of a PowerPoint deck that they never look at again. They go back to their practice and they don't implement anything, but that's not how it works in a Black Belt Digital workshop. So there's going to be accountability and action, and there'll be a mechanism for us to keep in touch so that I can keep track and help people out going forwards.
I love it. Like, I just, mic drop moment, I love it. Because I feel like as a conference director, we spend so much time thinking about the injection, threads, laser, you know, the clinical side of things, and we really focus there because of CMEs and because, you know, our target audience is medical practices who are, again, practicing medicine. But at the end of the day, this is the stuff that really, I think, really matters because no one's actually teaching it. I think what you said in the beginning about, you know, I want to share it, I want to make it simplified, I want to demystify things. We all know it's important, but no one's taking the time to, from an agency level of expertise, say, this is what this actually means for you day to day. Like, this is how you take what I know in 20 years of doing this and have had successful things for many, many years. I'll translate it for you at a practice level, how to do your website, how to do your automations. We find that here to be the thing all the time. It's like, I'm talking in simple terms about automations or about Zapier or, you know, what's your tech stack look like in your practice? Like, what do you mean a tech stack? Like, is that, I don't know what that means. Like, what systems are you using and are they connected to each other? And they have the same system doing the same, you know, doing 10 different things, and then they have another one that they'll buy that does it again. Another one, like, you've bought now 8 things that all do the same email marketing campaign. Let's pick one and stick with it. So there is a tendency to keep buying more and more and more things because they can't figure out how to work what they already have. And I feel like with this, it's forcing people to think about what is already in your world. You mentioned like mining your own patient pool. Like, what's already in your world that you can capitalize on and use in a more effective way to get the job done versus, again, buying more things. Or I think spending all your time on lead gen, it means that there's a gap in the practice on your existing patient base. Like, you're not nurturing enough to increase frequency of visit and to increase the spend per visit if your entire world is focused on lead generation, because your leaky bucket is leaking out way more than it's putting back in. So I think it's like, you know, then you look internally, what am I doing internally to do that, you know, to combat this issue? Is it nurturing? Is it email campaigns? Is it all these different things? So I feel like one touches the other. But this is coming in September. So you guys, I implore you with my whole heart, if you are having any issue with marketing of any sort, or if you think you're doing it really well and you just want to know how to do it better, you have to be at this class. Like, I'm going to sneak out and go sit in it if I can, because I think it's remarkable. And I went ahead and pre-ordered the book because in case I can't go to the class, Rick has published a book that kind of goes through, I think, this whole thing. You guys can look at blackbeltdigital.com and actually see the list of the chapters. And it's like a roadmap of all the things you're going to be able to do when you finish reading this book. And it's like, it reads like a marketing person's dream. It's like the Bible for marketers. But when is this book coming out? Because I feel like if you can't make it to the workshop, first of all, you can watch it virtually. There's a virtual ticket option, also in person. But worst case scenario, buy the freaking book and read all of it from cover to cover and like absorb it all into your bones. But when is it going to go live?
So I have told my publishers in no uncertain terms, I want to be traveling with a box of these to Dallas. So it will be out and available before I get there in September. And I've already signed off the cover and the final formatting and everything. And it's Black Belt Digital, the workshop, but on steroids, essentially. It's 200 pages, 60,000 words. It's taken me 5 years-ish to finish. But really, it's taken 20 years for everything that's gone into it. And as you said, blackbeltdigital.com, I've actually listed every single chapter and a kind of synopsis of what's in there. I gave some early manuscripts to a whole host of doctors and practitioners that I know and people in the space, and they've all given their thoughts on it, and you can see some of those. But it's really walking people through and giving what I hope is it becomes a really well-thumbed copy that you go back to. So if you want to know about, oh, we're thinking about working with an influencer, you go to that chapter and it's like, well, how influential are they really? Use this tool to look at their following and you might find out that 80% of their followers are Indonesian children. So it's not great. Or if they have a huge amount of followers, but they're all middle-aged men and that's not who you are after, think more carefully. So there's a kind of checklist at the end of every single chapter, which means that even if you have already read it, but you want to come back, you can just thumb your way to the correct thing that you're working on now. Like, oh my God, we've got this terrible conversion rate on our landing pages for our campaign. Let's go to the section on paid campaigns and landing pages, and it will highlight where the friction might be in that process. Why are people not booking in when they come to this page? Well, have you tried this, this, or this? Is there some social proof just before the call to action? Is there a short video that puts the person at ease? And it will give you a checklist of things to go through. And it really is a kind of, well, hopefully, like you say, a Bible of digital marketing. And I hope people in the aesthetic space, whether it's a practice owner or people working for a brand, will pick this up and kind of keep it in their pocket. It's not pocket size, unfortunately. Keep it in your Birkin bag or whatever you're lucky enough to have, and really go back to it as a reference point. Anytime you're building a campaign or you're just getting started or you want to gift it to somebody that you're working with who's doing that, that's what my hope is. And it's the culmination of a lot of trial and error. Lots of data has gone into it as well, because we built a digital academy for MERS, and we're starting to do similar things for other brands. With the MERS digital academy, our whole thing was, you guys as brands spend a lot of money trying to get consumers to walk into a clinic and ask for the thing that you sell, which is kind of an expensive way around to do it. Why don't you just teach your practitioners to get better at their own digital marketing and bring those people in at a local level? So we have currently around 200 clinics that are going through the MERS Digital Academy in the UK and Ireland. And this is what we do. We break it down for them. We teach them. We give them the tools to understand. And sometimes they bring along their existing agencies. And the ones that are open and collaborative don't mind. And the ones that shift in their chair and leave the Zoom call, that's fine. But we're teaching them and making it a democratic thing. And that's the same thing with the book. And it follows the same theme, Black Belt Digital. So there's a bit of fun in there too around Taekwondo and the tenets and the principles that apply to both becoming a black belt, also apply to digital marketing. So just as you can't turn up to one class and get given a black belt, doesn't work that way. It's very hard. Same thing if you, oh, we tried Facebook ads and it didn't work because you did it once, or you pressed that horrible sponsor this post button. Doesn't work like that. So this talks you through the consistency and the marginal gains and the habits and processes that you should get into, but also the things you should and shouldn't be doing in-house versus out-house, and really just gives you a kind of a pathway to get there from when you first start to years 1, 2, 3, or by revenue or by location, the things that are going to be most relevant to you when it comes to marketing on the internet.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, Rick. I gotta think back to the beginning of that discussion. One thing I would say, I think that you mentioned something that is a hot button for me, is patients are not searching for Juvederm or Kybella or Restylane Kiss. They're searching for, I want my lips bigger. I want to get rid of my double chin. I want to, you know, have a more defined Kardashian jawline. They're searching for, you mentioned before, like the condition, the problem. And so I think we have over-indexed in this country for sure, because we can use brand names here. I know like in Canada, they can't use brand names, but we've over-indexed the product name, hoping that the manufacturer's SEO and recognition will help us to drive our own traffic. Well, that sounds great in theory, but the patient's looking for a solve to their problem, right? They're looking for, I want, you know, like a breast dog. You know, you search for, I want my breast done. You don't search for, I want a Mentor implant. So why would you search for, I want a Kybella injection? You would search for, I want to get rid of my double chin. I think we have forgotten that in this country, for sure, because we are so brand name loyal. And so we're missing out. I had a person on a month or so ago talk about proprietary aesthetic methods, which is like you name the treatment, a thing that's your practice's brand. you know, whether it's like a perfect palate or whatever, you know, pick your poison there, but you don't market for the brand. Like, I'm not in charge of marketing for Allergan. I'm not in charge of marketing for Galderma. I'm marketing for me. So how do I make it about my practice? And so this idea about these long tail key phrases instead of key words, and like thinking about the condition based marketing, that has got to happen, because if I have to go on another site and see their whole list of products that they sell, I mean, it doesn't help me. I want to know what you're going to solve for me. That's kind of one thing. Second thing you mentioned about like these micro influencers is, this year for the conference, I did a different thing where I'm doing videos. You sent one in, videos for all the faculty. I learned last year, and this is a good note to practices, where if I market it alone, it only touches my audience, right? It doesn't keep going. But when I market it with your face on it, then you share it or make you a collaborator. We've increased our Instagram views, you know, impressions, following. Oh my gosh, I don't even know, like, I don't know, 100x. This year alone, just doing that, like some videos, people who think wouldn't even be an influencer get the most views of everyone, get the most interactions of everyone, because they have built this really tight knit group that really supports them. And so it's like, if everyone has a few eyeballs on them that really love them and care about them, then I'm going to get their people to come too, right? And their people, I don't need all of us to have a giant following. I just need a few of us to have a little bit of following. We all get people to come to the conference. And so this idea of like micro influencers, to me, so much more beneficial than going for big influencers, because they have this group that loves them and trust what they're saying. Like the Mommy and Me groups or your tennis group at the country club, they believe you. They believe that you're going to give them good advice, so they're going to follow you wherever you go, versus some rando on the internet who's like an influencer that they know she got paid to say it, right? Like, she didn't know what product she was going to discuss, so that day she sat down on Instagram and like did the ad. So I think there's such value in that, and like understanding how the market works. And also, if you want eyeballs versus if you want conversion, like, I need eyeballs for the conference. I need to sell tickets. I'm not treating patients, right? You guys need people to come in and actually sit in the chair and get injected. And that's solving a problem that they know is like personal for them and part of their ethos and who they are as a person looking in the mirror. And, you know, it's psychological, different kind of spin than like, hey, come to our medical conference and buy a ticket and come watch all these great injectors inject, you know, a little different sell. And so I think there is some idiosyncratic things around that is psychology. And, you know, you mentioned social proof and even things I think about a lot, Rick, which might be crazy, but if you're recruiting novice patients in, give them a feel of what a day looks like when they come into practice. Like, you're going to check in at the front desk. You're going to have this experience. We're going to take you into the back room to numb. And like, what are they going to expect when they get there? Because they're probably scared shitless. They've never had an injection before. Make them feel calm before they ever walk in. And then they'll actually hit the button to book now. Because like, oh, I get it. I know what's going to happen now. I'll go ahead and book that. When you go on a vacation, your hotel tells you that. You know, when you go to the gym, they tell you how the personal trainer is going to help you in the first day and give you a walk around of all the equipment. Why don't we do that in the med spa industry? We should put in a list.
100%.
I will get off my TED talk now. So I'll
I mean, I love that. I mean, one of the things you did mention around when you were talking about marketing for the brands instead of your practice and the conditions, how many websites are there that just list treatment names or device names, quite technical things? If I've never had an aesthetic treatment ever before, I haven't got a clue what 90% of that list even means. I have an issue, a problem, a condition, or a desire for an outcome. It might be an emotional outcome. It might be a clearly defined outcome or a particular area, but that's what I'm looking for. It's not a machine name or a device name or a pen name or whatever it is, number of mils, needles. None of that means anything to me. I just have three chins or whatever it is. So I need to fix that quick. So what we go to straight away when we're looking at a clinic or a med spa's website is, let's start with guidance and you mentioned hotels. There's so much to be learned from other sectors that you can apply, and hospitality is a fantastic one. How do we guide a potential patient, especially a brand new to the aesthetics world potential patient, through this journey? And how does this website, which is going to be where they form their first perception of you, your brand, your practice, what it's going to be like, they're going to form that opinion in 2 seconds when they hit the website, less than that, actually. How do we guide them through? And we talk a lot about the structure of the site. So we start with conditions rather than treatments. We use chatbots, which are way better than they used to be. And again, this is where AI can be leveraged somewhat with chatbots. They're a lot smarter now. So they can learn from the questions they get from visitors and be better each time at guiding people through. So, hey, what brought you here today? What kind of issues are you dealing with? What kind of outcome are you looking for? And it will guide them through before they even need to explore some menus on a website. And I actually think probably within the next 3 or 4 years, websites are going to look really different. They'll just be probably a chat interface. There won't be lists and lists of pages, probably. I built my first website in 1994. So I've seen lots of different trends and waves. And when I first started, we were building websites with Macromedia Flash and they were crazy. So I think that there'll be another iteration of websites and it'll be much more a kind of personalized experience to you. Just you. Your visit to that website for your needs will entirely change what you see in terms of content, guidance, and it should be a five-star experience, frictionless from when you type that search or when you first start that chat interface to getting booked in for a consultation. That should be seamless.
Yeah, you have to have online booking for that. We are blue in the face here saying that contact forms are great, but who follows up? Because the problem is not the contact form. The problem is that no one actually takes the contact form and does anything with it. You know, they don't have an automation set up to reach out to the patient and say, hey, we received your information. We'd love to get you booked in. I see that you have an issue with your three chins. We have some great solutions for that. You know, no one does the automation to actually get that thing done. So if you're not going to be able to manage the conversion of it yourself manually or an automation, you can't have a contact form. And I can't imagine making every patient text me to book. Like if they're going to have to text me to book, I'm the bottleneck now of my practice's success. And things, machines work well. Let them go do their work. I mean, online booking has algorithms, right? For us here, it's like what device, what room, what provider, can they do the procedure? Or is it booked on the same day as a different procedure that they can't do? Do they have coupons? Do they have a promotion? Yada, yada, yada. I mean, there's like 85 different checks that you have to look at. A person who gets that text message is not doing that. It's like a hair salon back in the 90s. They look at their little flip through book and they put you on the schedule. I can't imagine that being a great way. People are like really worried about, what if the patient books the wrong thing? They're going to book the wrong thing anyway, because they don't know what they want. They're going to tell you what they want and it's not going to be the right thing. So you're going to be batting 500, whatever you do, but at least let them book themselves in to get the confirmation email, to get put in the automation for reminders, to do the confirmation that, hey, I am going to be here tomorrow. I've paid my cancellation fee, my service deposit, whatever it is. That's like the smallest, like low hanging fruit ever, is just like have an actual conversion on your website, like have an actual book now button. That's easy. And I think also like e-commerce things, if you want to sell things, like have a 24/7 open door that's always, you know, the for sale sign is always lit. You're like a 7-Eleven here in the US. You can go buy a gift card, you can buy a promotion, you can buy skincare if you need it. Because if I don't have to have the provider's butt in the chair to do it, and I can still make money on it, and the patients can still come find me from an ad, a landing page, whatever it is, and actually spend money with my practice, I can be making revenue when I'm sleeping, right? And it doesn't require additional medical supplies and consents and questionnaires and photography and all the things that require, you know, an actual injection appointment to have. I think there's some things that are just like no-brainers to me that people just completely miss out on, that I can't figure out how to get that pushed through to the forefront. You know, like to tell them these are easy things you can be doing.
100%. I mean, the pandemic was an ideal opportunity to explore some of these low-hanging, remotely administered fruits that you're talking about, in particular, you know, retail skincare through an e-commerce site, virtual consultations, online bookings for those, and then later when we opened up again for real. But, you know, we still meet clinics in the UK for sure, and other markets that still don't have those basics in place, and it's such a huge area of missed opportunity. You know, it seems to make very little sense to be doing all of this manually through texts or what have you. It makes a huge difference, the follow-up. It's a big gap for us. Even when we have everything in place, when we've driven lots of traffic and improved rank and we've sent leads, then it's kind of out of our hands at that point. Like, what happens now? Did you follow up within a certain amount of time? What's the SLA for that? What's the process for that? What's the percentage conversion rate at that point from the lead to conversion to a procedure or a treatment? There's a big gap there in process and data and understanding in your typical practice, and it's a lot of money left on the table at the end of the day through lack of basics in automation. So your reminders, your pre-appointment information from an online booking, but also even if you already got that in place, the more sophisticated stuff is also money left on the table. Where there's a couple of clinics that we're working with where we've done the basic stuff. We've got online booking, we've got reminders, we've got pre and post information. That's great. Then what I would call level two of automation is triggering specific and personalized comms based on a particular treatment that they had or condition that they have. Then level three of automation, I think, is writing scripts that run every night that interrogate the data in your system and go, how many people right now are men over 40 that had toxin 6 months ago? Find that list and send this specific message to them now, and do that every night for 50 different questions. That's level three of automation. And very few reach that point, actually. It's kind of like the 0.1% club. But it's still money on the table. And some of those scripts and automations generate quite a significant percentage of repeat revenue. And I find that part really exciting. When you uncover someone that hasn't done any of that stuff and they haven't really gone deep on Google Local, I start rubbing my hands on their behalf because, wow, you're going to have a great 6 months because all this stuff is about to come to you that you've never even considered.
Yeah, I'm a big believer that unless you can handle leads coming in with a, you mentioned SLA, so a service level agreement, for those of you who don't know, it's like what's your SOP basically for leads. If you can't handle that yet, you don't have that defined, you can't run ads yet. You can't spend money on things that are going to bring in lead gen, because if you do and they all come in and you don't ever follow up with them, you're going to lose them and they're going to have a bad taste in their mouth about the fact that, hey, I contacted the practice, no one ever called me. You do more harm than good to drive them there if no one actually converts them or talks to them. And so, again, that's at least, if nothing more, an easy SMS conversion, like automation that says, hey, I just received your information, whatever it is. Easy things, low-hanging fruit with that. So I think that that's a big one. It's like, you just got to do that. And then I think things like tagging, you know, for us, I look at, we have clients that were in EMR that have paper, they're on paper. Like, how do you look at data on paper? How do you go through your script that you're writing? You're going to sort through all your charts overnight on paper, like lick your thumb and start flipping through to see who's had what and what day. You have to rely on your POS, which God forbid it's not a good one. Really, your POS should be inside of your EMR, so it's all one big thing. But it's just impossible to have data-driven decision-making if you don't have metrics, and you can't get metrics if you use paper, or if you use things that are not connected in a way that makes sense and you can like look at the whole holistic data story. So a lot to be learned. If you want to go deep in the marketing world, you have to have good back-end information to feed your marketing campaigns. And if you don't have systems to do that, it becomes extraordinarily problematic and not nearly successful. So you mentioned data-driven decisions in your book as well. It's one of the chapters about, you know, looking at data. When you think about data, because that to me is like, you know, that's a word that no one understands. Like, it's just like one of those, it's vaporware. What kind of data from a marketing perspective, if I'm a practice owner, is most important to me? Is it click-through rates? Is it conversion rates? Is it my marketing spend as a percent of my revenue? Like, what do I care about my KPI dashboard for marketing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you said earlier, I think, is it chapter 14? You know better than me, my book
structure. I think it's 14. I'm a total nerd, Rick. I like to know everything about everything.
I love the research. I really appreciate it as well. So chapter 14 in Black Belt Digital talks about the data-driven aspect to this. And I think this way anyway. I won't go on gut feel. I will look at the data in my own business to determine what happens, but also for our clients. There's lots and lots of tools. There's lots and lots of metrics you can track, but I actually keep it pretty simple. And we try to do the same for practices because there's already so much for us to communicate and for the practitioner to, or the practice owner to understand, that really keeping it simple is important. So we try to think of it in a funnel. And I don't mean in terms of marketing automation as a funnel, but as a sales funnel for practice. So we talk about traffic, and that's Google Business Profile traffic, traffic to the website. Then we drill down into the source of the traffic. So where's it coming from? Is it organic search, local search, Google ads, social ads, email campaigns, marketing automation, referrals, whatever it is, PR, if you can track some of the PR you've done, it's a difficult one. Then it's engagement. That's the next stage down. And engagement means different things on different platforms. So with social, could be things like comments, saves. That's a really important one. If you're creating savable content, then you're really onto a winner. Click-throughs and interactions on your Google Business Profile. That's a really key one because it's not only about where do you rank locally and how much exposure is your business profile getting for these different search terms, but how attractive is your profile to then send them the next step through to your website, your booking system? Did they phone you up? Did they click to find out where your business is located? Did they dig into the Google posts that you're definitely posting every week, right, guys? And did they look at the Q&A section that none of you are using, but I'm going to teach you how to? Did they do that? That's what's the engagement. Then it's leads. Leads is filled out a form, made a booking, sent you a DM. Then the in-practice conversion that we talked about, which is the hardest part to track. But I know that you guys have built a lead management tool, and I definitely want to talk to you about that because it's such a missing piece of the puzzle. It's kind of super hard to find out what happens here for so many of our clients. But, you know, what was the conversion rate? What's the process to follow up? And how can we learn from that to feed back into the beginning of traffic? On our side, internally, we're interested, and we will talk to you about, if you're interested, cost per acquisition, things like that, because that's and per channel as well. What, in terms of the marketing dollars in, and I completely agree with you, Tiffany, that nobody should be touching paid ads until all of these basics are in place. And organically, but also how you react to leads when they come in automatically or through a process with humans. But what is the cost per acquisition, cost per lead? What's the typical customer lifetime value annually from certain campaigns? Which campaigns deliver the best bang for buck? You know, if we're going down the pay-per-click route, we would look at, are we going to start with a gateway treatment? Like a hydrofacial or something, that then you have a really cool process internally for turning into an amazing annual spend with that patient with lots of other aesthetic treatments. Or do we go with the high ticket items? Or do we know that in your area, you're the only practice that has a cool sculpting machine? Probably unlikely these days, but still happens sometimes. And we would start there. So there's lots of metrics that are nuanced, but the basic ones are always the same. Traffic, where did it come from? How engaged was it? How many leads did it deliver? And what does that cost? And then A/B testing happens to determine between each of those pillars, those channels, which one's really delivering here and which one is largely a waste of time. Let's turn our attention to the one that's really delivering for now. Not to say we won't come back to the others later, but let's put our effort and our money and our focus and our attention into this one that's delivering now. That's how we operate. And that's how we teach practice owners at a basic level. And we would work with them and guide them to tweak whatever system they've got to help us capture the data. So we've got as full a picture as we can down that funnel from somebody had an idea in their head when they looked in the mirror today through to they're a patient and they've been with you 12 months and they just spent $30,000.
I love it. It's like all the steps in a row that deliver them to you, hopefully. And you mentioned customer lifetime value. You know, we think a lot of here about frequency of visit. Do they spend more than they actually came in? Are you having to raise your prices to cover your, you know, if you're not getting enough people in to cover your bills, are you raising prices? Are you, you know, undercutting something else? Like, you got to give and take here and there. And so I think knowing that number, knowing what those numbers look like really intimately, you can make a lot of really smart decisions because you know what is and what is not driving in patients. And I challenge all of you who are listening to look at your Instagram, like your sources of booked patients who actually convert, not just people who DM you and things, but that actually converted and spent money, and compare the source from Instagram coming in versus the other ways they come in and see which one's bigger. Because I feel like in almost every practice, it's not Instagram. They think it is, but it really probably isn't of those that actually converted and spent money. And then you know kind of where you're spending. You know, we spend so much time building content for Instagram, and I don't know that it actually converts anybody or at the same level or the same sophistication that it converts a patient who's actually looking, to your point, looking for something and shows up on your site and then buys because they're already a hot lead coming in wanting what you have to offer, not a voyeur like I am on TikTok watching you for a year before I ever take action. So a little bit of a difference there. And then as we kind of wrap up here, I'm going to go through AI quickly. Give us your best AI ideas. You know, here we're using it for Midjourney. We're using Gamma for PowerPoint decks. We're using Tome for PowerPoint decks. We use all the ChatGPT things you could ever want or ever need in your life. We use it for all the new code editing thing that you can upload the documents and it will give you spreadsheets and read things for you. We're big nerds here with ChatGPT, but it can be both good and bad. So give us a quick, like a little 2-minute overview of where you see AI going and how you're using it in marketing and if we should be relying on it or still doing our, you know, as an assistant or as really doing a lot of the work for us.
Yeah, I would say you're probably way advanced compared to most practice owners and practitioners in the AI that you're using. It is super useful for content, as we've said, but it only really gets you 70% there. And you've got to be really good at prompting it. We're actually hiring prompt engineers at the moment. I've got a job ad out for a prompt engineer because this is really important. I'll give you just a quick anecdote about this. So one of my team digital coaches working with a clinic in Australia, quite openly, we will explain to clinics that we're going to use AI to create this or create most of this. And in that case, this was a downloadable guide about, I think it was laser treatments. Doesn't matter. We were building lead magnets for the website, which is something that we'll cover in the workshop. I'll explain how you can turn your website into a mailing list building machine for people that aren't yet ready to book using lead magnets. We used ChatGPT to write this guide. The clinic in Australia had a look at it and said, oh my God, it's super boring. The copy's really robotic. Like, I hate this. We need a proper copywriter. I stepped into this one and said, I'll have a look at the copy for you. I put it back into ChatGPT, but what I did was prompt it very differently. So I explained, hey, we've got this clinic in Australia. They use kind of humor and parochial language in their content. They are really fun people. They have these locations. They thought the last thing you did here was super boring and robotic. I want you to try again. Can you do that for me? Of course. Boosh, it spits it out. I wait a suitable amount of time. I sent it back to Australia. Oh my God, Rick, you've nailed it. We love this. It's so much better than the AI version. So if you prompt it properly, it's amazing for content, but it still only gets you about 70, 80% there. I think, so yes to AI for content. And what does that mean? It's great for ad captions. It's great for writing the beginnings of blog articles or web copy or email campaigns. I think it's a partner. It's not a fully outsourced solution at the moment. It's really useful in building chatbots. So we've been working with a company called InquiryBot. We're integrating ChatGPT into it or the generative model behind it. So we're API-ing into open API chat. And we're having those chatbots learn from the questions that come in to it. It's also really good for bouncing ideas around for brand names, campaign names, things like that. I don't think it's quite there yet for image creation. Somebody's foot is always upside down or their eyes are back to front, or it's kind of weird for that from a campaign perspective, but it's only a matter of months before it will be able to create pretty good images for social posts or email campaigns, that kind of thing. We're using it in the background for editing podcasts, editing videos, things like that. So I've taught a tool my voice. And if I mess up in a podcast, I just overtype and then it gives it my voice. That kind of thing is pretty cool. You can create lots of efficiencies. We use it in the Digital Academy, the coaching, to summarize the coaching calls and automatically plug them using the Google Sheets template language into the action plans for that clinic. I just gave away a secret of the Digital Academy, but we're using it in lots of ways in the background. But for clinics, I think there's some watch outs, which is because of ChatGPT and how good it is at creating content. That means you've got to make sure there's going to be tons of content on Google, which devalues it, which means that actually you've got to work harder to make sure yours is really good for these strategies still to work. But there's also lots of ways you can use it. And if you're not using it, you're already behind in your ad captions, A/B testing things, email marketing captions, that kind of thing. So AI, I think, how is it going to impact aesthetics in the near term? Really, it's that if you're not using it, you're already behind from a cost-based perspective and an efficiency perspective and the ability to kind of create enough to compete. You're already behind. In the future, who knows? I think websites will change quite dramatically, as I said. I think AI will become your pay-per-click campaign manager at some point because it will be far more efficient than any of us could be at bid management and keyword optimization, etc. So it's going to happen over the next 2 or 3 or 4 years, but AI is going to have an impact on the business and marketing side. on a clinical side, who knows? I don't know. Is it going to be administering treatments at home? I don't know. That's probably 10, 20 years.
Well, I've worked on that side too. There's some cool things clinically that AI can do, but a lot of it's augmented reality. It's recommendations. I think even for the person who's listening saying, I don't want to do AI marketing, I use it for job postings. I use it for if you want to do pre and post instructions, writing contracts for you, writing leases for you, writing applicable questionnaires based on your state laws, looking at conditions and assessing what the next step would be. So it's really good at looking at, you know, a holistic amount of data and then giving you like an output of what you should do next. So even if you think marketing is not my jam yet, I don't trust it, you can find ways to optimize other parts of your life so you can focus on marketing, like get the time back. But I think to your point, you know, Midjourney will prove to you quickly. If you're not a good prompt engineer, Midjourney will give you the craziest images you've ever seen. But we're just now, I think we're in V5 right now. We're getting finally images where the arms aren't kind of crazy backward and things aren't, you know, all dismembered. But, you know, prompt engineering is now its own discipline. We work on it here a lot. The act as is my favorite prompt, you know, act as, and also bullying it a little bit like, hey, that wasn't very good. Try it again. Like you can make it keep trying and, you know, it's going to probably come in my sleep and kill me because I'm a bully. It's in a sentient being over to murder me because I'm like, that's not good enough. ChatGPT.
Always be nice to ChatGPT.
Yes, just always tell him that he's pretty and that you know, that you love his work. But I do say thank you. And he's like, oh, you're so welcome. I'm like, oh God, that's weird. But, you know, there's lots of ways to use it. I think it's not replacing anyone right now, but it will make quicker work of some of the things that are just mundane that you have to do anyway. But Rick, I think with that, we are like way out of time, which is shocking. I could talk to you all day long. You're my kind of people. I love these discussions, but you're going to be again in September at Aesthetic Next in Dallas, Texas, doing a 2.5-hour workshop focused on Black Belt Digital. So definitely guys, if you have not yet gone online to book that workshop, you have to do it. Like I'm telling you, I'm probably most excited about this workshop as all things AN5, because it's just such a big gap for us as an industry. So go book that immediately. And then Rick will be there, obviously, on site. I'm sure perusing around, walking around, hopefully with some books in his hand you can buy. If not, go online and pre-order that book. Do it now, blackbeltdigital.com. And look up Rick. He's on LinkedIn. Your LinkedIn's very, very busy. You're always posting on LinkedIn, Instagram, all the places. Connect with him before he comes. Make sure you let him know you're coming to his class here in Dallas so you guys can get acquainted before he shows up. But we can't wait to have you here. And I'm so excited to get you in Texas, in the USA. Hopefully you get a whole client list full of American clients that you can do even more work here in the future.
I'm very, very excited about this one. And in fact, it'd be my first time in Dallas for about 20 years. I was in Dallas 20 odd years ago. I was working as an intern at a place called Dallas Semiconductors. Mm-hmm. It's a whole nother story. I won a design award. I did my degree in product design. I designed an intelligent device that used this semiconductor. They sent me there. Anyway, can't wait to get back there. You forgot to mention that we're going to give some sneaky value adds to people when this goes out. So there's a scorecard that's going to get sent out and people will be able to fill that out. And they're also going to get some little snippets from the Black Belt Digital Workshop just to whet the appetite and get people ready. But yes, I will be there. Yes, I will be there for the whole conference and your awards evening as well. Thinking about maybe wearing my taekwondo instructor suit to the workshop just to really add to the theme. I'm very excited to be there and I can't wait to finally meet you in person as well.
Well, same. Well, we will see all of you guys hopefully in Dallas with Rick in September. And if not, like I said, go online, get it now. And if you're listening to the podcast, you didn't get the email, check your email because chances are you have in your email queue all the things, the free tools that he just mentioned, the scorecard and things. So go take advantage of that and look online for all the other things that you can get from Rick. But we will see you in September in Dallas. And for the rest of you, I'll see all of you guys next week. Thanks, Rick. We appreciate it. See you soon.
Thank you so much. See you soon, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to another episode of For the Record. This podcast is not intended to provide legal or medical advice. It's for entertainment, education, and information purposes only. For more information on this week's guest or to get started with Aesthetic Record, email us at info@aestheticrecord.com. Be sure to tune in next week for more fresh perspectives on disrupting the status quo and surviving in the aesthetics industry.